Hello everyone, this is Ian and welcome to this, the February edition of the Angus Newshound, our monthly roundup of news from the Angus County Press, brought to you by the trusty volunteers here at Angus Talking Newspapers. My apologies if my voice is a wee bit wobbly, as I'm in the middle of a cold. It must be the season for it, for as you will hear, one of our readers, Julie, also has a cold. Probably worse in fact than mine, but as you no doubt will agree, she still managed to do the reading well. It's also the season for rain, a lot of it. I'm sure that you, like me, are a wee bit fed up with it. It's still raining as I put this recording together 1 week into February, but I hope that by the time you listen to it, we will be having some brighter, drier conditions. As usual, we cover the last 3 weeks of the news, and the readers for this month are Muriel, who's reading the news from the Angus County Press of the 22nd of January, then Irene, reading from the paper of the 29th of January, and then Julie, covering the latest edition, that of the 5th of February. There seems to be more news than usual this month, especially for the 5th of February edition, so I'm sorry that if you listen on a CD, there's been no room to fit in an extra article. But if you listen on a USB stick, you'll find that at the end, there's an article by Liz from the Talking News Federation on a little-known woman called Wally Funk, a pioneering American aviator. Born in 1939, Wally's long list of female firsts is amazing. Often overlooked these days, she has had a long and remarkable career in the American space program. But back then, in the mid-20th century, NASA, the American Space Agency, decided against backing female astronauts. So Wally had to wait until 2021 to finally make it into space at the grand old age of 82. Now, before going, let me ask as usual to please return the yellow pochette you receive this recording in, and also please return the USB stick if that is how you listen to it. If you received a CD, there's no need to return it, but please do return the pochette. All you need to do is reverse the label on the pochette and get it posted. No need for a stamp. Stacey will be with you next month and I'll be back in April. Until then, and hopefully drier and brighter days, goodbye and keep safe and dry. Bye.
Hi, my name is Muriel and I'm reading from Angus County Press, dated the 22nd of January. During the festive season, Father Christmas organised a drive-through Santa's Grotto within Arbroath Fire Station to raise funds for charity. The firefighters were helped out with Christmas lighting donated by local companies such as Morrison's, B&Q, Silver Bells and Home Bargains, and the grotto proved to be very popular with families. Arbroath Fire Station organises regular charity fundraising events and the grotto raised £402 from donations, which has been donated to the Learning Tree Partnership in the town. The organisation creates learning opportunities for people in Angus with learning disabilities to teach them to interact within the community and prevent them feeling isolated. Its shop on Guthrie Port sells books and toys to help raise funds for its activities. Arbroath Darts star Alan Souter teamed up recently with Arbroath High School to raise funds for guide dogs. He attended the event at Lodge 299 on Friday evening to help pupils with an annual project to raise funds for charity. Alan took up darts when he was 17 and has been playing on the professional circuit for more than 5 years and has been a firefighter with the local fire service. He and his partner, Amanda Smith, have also been involved in guide dog training for 9 years, so he was happy to help when approached by pupils. Every year, as part of their moral studies course, third-year pupils divide into groups of four and choose a charity for which to raise funds. They then make a presentation to a judging panel regarding their chosen charity, explaining their fundraising activities. The winning team is then chosen to receive a further £3,000 towards their chosen charity. On Friday, three pupils, Gregors Dymock, Callum McKenzie and Harry Hay attended the charity darts match they organised with fellow team member Oliver Parker, unable to attend due to illness. Alan and Amanda's current guide dog puppy, Sunday, was also present. A healthy turnout of fans turned up and played against Alan for a donation towards the guide dogs. There was also a raffle with bottles of wine, food hamper, toys and sweets, and signed Arbroath FC strip was also auctioned off during the course of the evening, with all proceeds going to the charity. Forfar Probus welcomed branch manager Ian and commercial manager Jane of Royal Bank of Scotland in Forfar, who advised and warned members about the risks posed by fraudsters. They gave examples of customer mistakes and the efforts banks are putting in to prevent sometimes tragic consequences of giving information to a seemingly plausible, friendly voice over the phone or online chat. The professional criminal on the other end is out to glean every scrap of information he can from your voice, your social media history, your buying habits, or even the unshredded paper invoices in your bin. In their presentation, Ian and Jane covered cold calls from the bank, fear-based tactics, bargain offers online, investment fraud, impersonation, and AI voice copying to ask for money. They also talked about rental fraud, romance scam, money mule transfer, the importance of keeping your bank card hidden and secure, using long passwords and checking your balances regularly. The presenters urged members to stay calm when listening to a suspicious phone call or faced with a doubtful email. Do not panic and do something hasty, but pause and hang up. Close the computer and ring the very helpful fraud phone, telephone 159. Ian and Jane were thanked for their startling revelations and very helpful advice. The next speaker will be Simon Giles with The Gathering Storm. Police were called to a Monifieth primary school recently due to complaints of speeding and abuse directed at the school's crossing patrol officers. Members of the Carnoustie, Monifieth and Sidlaws community policing team attended at the school's closing time to assist the crossing patrol and to engage with motorists on Victoria Road. During the visit, a number of drivers were spoken to regarding adherence to the 20 mile per hour speed limit, which is in place outside the school, with officers reporting that motorists were receptive to the advice given. Constable Ronnie Irvine said monitoring will continue and also warned against subjecting crossing patrollers to abuse in the course of their jobs. He said, I spoke with a number of motorists regarding excessive speed within the 20 mile per hour limit outside the school at closing time, all of whom were receptive. We will continue to monitor this area and will consider more formal enforcement action should vehicle speeds not reduce. School crossing patrol officers provide an invaluable service in keeping children safe when travelling to and from school. They should not be subjected to abuse, and any such behaviour reported to police will be taken seriously. He added that Police Scotland will continue to work with its local partners in the area to promote road safety and ensure a safe environment for pupils, school staff and crossing patrol officers. Nursing staff who share almost 1,000 years of service with the NHS have been honoured with Queen's Nursing Institute Scotland QNIS Long Service Awards for their commitment to the community. The award is given to community nurses with 21 years of service in recognition of their dedication. A total of 41 nurses working in Angus, Dundee and Perth and Kinross received the award from Emma Legg, QNIS Professional Nurse Lead. at a celebration event at Royal Victoria Hospital. The nurses, who have a combined length of service of 976 years, work across a range of areas, including district nursing, community mental health and primary care. One of the nurses awarded was Karen Oliver, a community staff nurse in Angus, who died last September. Karen had a 31-year nursing career in Angus, 22 years of which were spent with the district nursing team in Arbroath. At the request of Karen's husband Gary, the award was collected by Aileen Smith, senior nurse for primary care. Aileen said the award is a well-deserved honour for Karen, as she was someone who always put others first, and we know that she would have been delighted to share this occasion with her colleagues. She was a much valued colleague and a huge loss to the district nursing family. Jane Smith, Nurse Director for Dundee Health and Social Care Partnership, said it really was an honour to celebrate the dedication and expertise of this group of nurses. We are extremely fortunate to have individuals with this level of service and experience to support families across Tayside. Angus South SNP candidate Lloyd Melville has written to the Chief Executive of Historic Environment Scotland, HES, seeking clarity on the continuing closure of Arbroath Abbey. While the Abbey Visitor Centre and grounds are open, its interior has been closed since 2021 after safety inspections revealed unstable high-level masonry. The ruins are on a repair list drawn up by HES, but Mr Melville has also raised concerns over a lack of publicly available information on plans to reopen the site. The heritage organisation has blamed climate change for accelerating the decay of materials such as the Abbey's distinctive red sandstone. COVID and the closure disrupted the 2020 celebrations, marking the 700th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Arbroath at the Abbey, which is a major tourist draw for the area. Edsel Castle was also closed for safety reasons, but reopened to the public last year. In his letter to Katerina Brown, Mr Melville acknowledged the importance of safety and conservation, but said there remains concern locally about the absence of clear publicly communicated information on what residents and visitors can expect and when. He said that the importance of Arbroath Abbey to the town and to Scotland's history cannot be understated, as he sought an update on works from the Chief Executive. The HES website states, due to access restrictions in place as a precautionary measure, while we undertake high-level masonry inspections, the internal spaces of the Abbey remain closed. Mr Melville said Angus is Scotland's birthplace and Arbroath Abbey is a jewel at the crown of Scotland's history. It must be protected for future generations, and the ongoing works by HES will be important to securing a long-term future for the site. However, it is important that the process is accompanied by clear communication and transparency about access and future plans, so residents, visitors and local businesses are not left in prolonged uncertainty. He has asked that any available information be shared publicly at the earliest opportunity. A new art project for older people will get underway in Forfar next month, offering people the chance to develop their creative sewing skills and work together to create a community banner. Local professional artist Maureen Crosby will lead the activities at Forfar Library's Lend and Mend Hub, giving people an opportunity to refresh skills or learn the basics of using a sewing machine to produce a collaborative piece of art. Taster sessions will take place on Friday, February the 6th, followed by a series of four weekly workshops on Fridays, with the option to attend morning or afternoon sessions. All of the events are free to attend. The workshops are part of a new project led by Luminate, Scotland's creative ageing organisation, in partnership with Angus Alive, Angus Health and Social Care Partnership and Voluntary Action Angus. The project will offer a creative programme to three groups of older people in Forfar. As well as the library workshops, Maureen will also work with Lochside Connections Dementia Meeting Centre and the Deirdre Knights Day Centre. It is hoped that a selection of the artworks created will potentially be shared with the wider community at a later date. Anne Gallagher, Director of Luminate, said, "Luminate aims to inspire, support and develop creative ageing practice across Scotland, widening the opportunities available to older people. We're excited to be working in collaboration with local partners in Forfar on this new project." Sally Wilson, Service Manager, Angus Health and Social Care Partnership, said, "We are delighted to be part of this collaboration with Luminate, creating and enhancing opportunities for social connection is a vital part of the Angus Community Planning Partnership work, and we are proud to support it. We have no doubt that people will enjoy taking part and benefit from being involved. Booking is essential as places are limited and will be allocated on a first-come, first-served basis. Participants must be library members and can join free when they sign up. To book, telephone 01307 492 121, 01307 492 121, or email forfar-library@angusalive.scot. forfar-library@angusalive.scot. A special edition beer crafted in honour of the legendary rugby player Dodie Weir has launched across Aldi Scotland stores. Brewed by Aldi supplier Cold Town Beer in collaboration with the Late Scotland International and Motor Neuron Disease MND campaigner Dodie Weir himself, Dodie Beer pays tribute to a man whose impact extended far beyond the rugby pitch. It celebrates not only his formidable career in sport, but also his relentless determination off the field and raising awareness and funds for MND research. The company will be the only supermarket chain in Scotland to stock the product. Launched ahead of the Six Nations tournament, giving rugby fans the chance to raise a glass at home, knowing that every can bought helps support an important cause. Cold Town Beer has been a charitable partner of My Name's Dodie Foundation for more than 5 years, pledging a minimum donation of £11,000 annually to support the foundation's vital work, helping to drive forward its search for a cure for MND. Alan Leslie, Buying Director at Aldi Scotland, said Dodie Weir is one of our nation's greatest sporting legends, and his foundation has played a powerful role in raising awareness and generating vital funds in the fight against MND. We are proud to support this meaningful collaboration, which allows our customers to enjoy the beer in the knowledge that proceeds will be donated to My Name's Dodie Foundation. Montrose boss Stuart Petrie was proud of the boys despite their exit from the Scottish Cup at the hands of Partick Thistle. His players put up more of a fight at Firhill on Saturday, the 17th of January, than they had done in going out of the KDM Evolution Trophy to Adrianians a few days before. Tony Watt gave Thistle the lead after 10 minutes as being left unmarked in the box to head in a Patrick Redding cross. Watt then doubled their lead 3 minutes after the break as Montrose failed to clear a corner and he stabbed home. The visitors were handed a lifeline on 73 minutes when Logan Chalmers was shown a second yellow card, reducing Thistle to 10 men. Montrose then pulled on one back with 5 minutes left when Tommy North scored into an empty net after Josh Clark made a hash of dealing with a high ball from Evan Towler. However, just a minute later, Terry Masson was also booked for a second time and equal numbers were restored. Thistle sealed the tie in injury time as Rico Diak beat the offside trap to beat Cammy Gill and make it 3-1. Petrie told Montrose FC TV, "We asked for a different approach and a different performance from the Airdrie one. I thought we went out with very little fight and were second best for long spells in that game. We knew how dangerous Tony Watt is and we gave him a three-hander. Then the second goal is schoolboy stuff, but the guys stuck to their task. I'm proud of the boys. Our work rate and effort was really good. We just came up against a team that was slightly better than us on the day. It was back to League One action on Tuesday night, the 20th of January, as Montrose lost 4-1 away to Alloa Athletic, with Graham Webster scoring a late consolation. Montrose keeper Cammy Gill made his 100th appearance for the club recently in the 2-1 win against East Fife. The 27-year-old arrived in the summer of 2023 from Arbroath and quickly made the number one jersey his own. Gill said, "I've loved my few years here at Montrose. It really is a special club. This is the most I've ever enjoyed my football and I'm hoping for much, much more." Two brothers who scored against each other recently are now both with clubs in Angus. Jake Sutherland has extended his loan at Forfar Athletic from Dunfermline Athletic until the end of the season. The 19-year-old striker has scored 5 goals in 25 appearances since arriving at Station Park in August. Having been used mostly from the bench, Jake has recently nailed down a starting spot in the side. He has started the last 3 League 2 games, scoring in Forfar's last 2 outings against both Clyde and Stranraer. Scoring for Clyde against Forfar that day was his brother Taylor, who has now made the switch to Montrose. The 20-year-old forward made 19 appearances on loan at the Lanarkshire side in the first half of the season, also scoring 5 goals. Following his departure from Dunfermline on Monday, he was quickly offered a 6-month deal at Lynx Park. Taylor said, "I look forward to showing the fans what I can bring and hopefully push us up the table."
Hi, my name is Irene and I'm reading from the Angus County Press, dated Thursday, January the 29th, 2026. Epic Cycle for Charities. Two local charities are to benefit from an epic charity cycle journey across Scotland this summer. Arbroath Football Club Community Trust and the Archie Foundation are among 4 organisations which are being supported by this year's BP Coast to Coast Challenge, which will take participants through some of Scotland's most epic scenery, raising money for 4 charities. And amateur cyclists in the area are being urged to sign up to take part, with more than 50 people already having done so. This year's cycle will start on the west coast in Ullapool, with the route taking in Bewley and Elgin before arriving in Aberdeen, covering around 240 miles between June 4th and 7th. Now in its 17th year, the annual endurance challenge has so far raised more than £2.5 million for good causes. Every year, employees of BP North Sea vote for the charities which will benefit from the proceeds of the cycle. Their fundraising efforts are then match funded by the BP Foundation. Committee member Gary McIntosh, who is a turnaround operations specialist at BP, is a coast-to-coast veteran who has completed the ride 5 times. He said the money raised would make an incredible difference to each of the charities. He said, "We are looking forward to a new route this year, starting on the beautiful west coast in Ullapool, then making our way to Bewley, through the Highlands and Moray Coast to Elgin, and then through Aberdeenshire to the city of Aberdeen. Gary continued, "Those of us who are fortunate enough to have done the coast-to-coast cycle previously can attest to how challenging it can be, but knowing we are collectively raising money for four fantastic charities gives us the motivation to keep pushing through. We know each of the charities will put the funds raised to extremely good use, supporting children and families, tackling poverty and supporting local communities. And we are also grateful to the BP Foundation for matching what we raise to double the charitable donation. The Archie Foundation has helped children and families across the north of Scotland for more than 25 years, funding specialist roles and projects at Tayside Children's Hospital in Dundee, Royal Aberdeen Children's Hospital, and more recently at Highland Children's Unit in Inverness and Dr. Grace Hospital in Elgin. Paula Cormack, Chief Executive, said Archie is incredibly grateful to have been chosen as a beneficiary of Coast to Coast for another year, and I can't wait to get going on June the 4th. All the money we receive will be used to fund our work supporting babies, children and families during a hospital or neonatal unit stay or following a bereavement. Each of the charities does amazing work, and the efforts of the cyclists will have a huge impact in their local communities. Our Broth FC Community Trust officially launched in 2020 and aims to improve the life chances of the people of our Broth through the power of football. It runs projects which help to improve health, education, fitness and general well-being while promoting community spirit and inclusion of all. The other two beneficiaries are Aberdeen FC Community Trust and Instant Neighbour. The Coast to Coast Challenge is open to cyclists of all abilities, with individuals covering their own accommodation and food costs. Each cyclist has a fundraising target of £1,000, and the total fundraising is split between the four charities. The group is mainly made up of BP employees as well as BP alumni, representatives from the chosen charities and local organisations backed by a support team. Crackdown on scooters. Police are cracking down on the illegal use of e-motorcycles and e-scooters on public roads and footpaths in and around our Broth. Angus community officers are launching Operation Challenge in the town as part of ongoing efforts to tackle the problem. Operation Challenge is Police Scotland's response to concerns surrounding the unlawful and antisocial use of these vehicles. Its introduction follows a noted increase in reports of e-motorcycles and e-scooters being used in an antisocial manner within the Arbroath area. Community policing officers from across the South Angus will work together in the coming weeks to identify and take action against individuals using the vehicles illegally. Sergeant Christopher Grieve, who leads the South Angus Community Policing Team, emphasised that it is an offence to use the scooters and motorcycles in public areas, although they are legal to use on private land. He said, "In response to concerns raised by members of our community, I will be deploying officers who will use proven tactics to target individuals involved in the illegal use of e-motorcycles and e-scooters. These vehicles are often linked to antisocial behaviour. While they are legal to purchase, they are illegal to use on public roads and footpaths. We urge parents and guardians to ensure that children are not using these vehicles in public places. Where offences are identified, officers will use their powers to seize e-scooters and e-bikes." Sergeant Grieve added that Police Scotland will continue to engage with local communities and partners to improve safety and address antisocial behaviour across our Broth. Anyone with information that can assist with the identification of the users of these vehicles who are using them irresponsibly can email their Broth Community Policing Team directly at tayside-communitywards@broth.scotland.police.uk or call the Police Scotland non-emergency line on 101 or the charity's Crime Stoppers anonymously for free on 0800 555 111. New Look Marks Whiskey's launch. A Brechin distillery has unveiled its new brand packaging, marking the next chapter in its story following a milestone bicentenary year. The packaging refresh follows the celebration of Glencairn's 200th anniversary and the opening of its first ever design centre. Designed to reflect the distillery's premium global positioning as one of the world's oldest working distilleries, the new look brings a contemporary edge to the brand, while the award-winning single malt inside remains unchanged, traditionally crafted as it has been since 1825. The new packaging debuts this month across four expressions: Glencairn 10-year-old, 15-year-old, Reserva PX, and a brand new 17-year Old Reserve de Calvados cask finish. The remainder of Glencairn's range will transition to the new look in the coming weeks. Hand-drawn illustrations created by Edinburgh-based artist Andrew Davidson reference how the distillery would have appeared in 1825. Renowned for his work on the Harry Potter book series, the ad has acclaimed artistic vision to Glencairn's rich storytelling. A defining feature of the new design is the water wheel motif, an enduring symbol of Glencairn since 1825, featured prominently across the brand, including an embossed detail around the base of each bottle. Ian Forteith, Master Blender, said this new packaging represents evolution, not reinvention. Our time-honoured production methods, elegant house style and commitment to traditional craftsmanship remains unchanged. What has changed is how we tell our story, with a confident new look that celebrates both our heritage and the quality of the exceptional whisky we make. The packaging launch also marks the arrival of a new expression, Glencairn's 17-year-old Reserve de Calvados. Crafted by Ian, the expression is made using hand-selected Glencairn single malts initially matured in ex-bourbon American oak casks before being expertly married and finished in the finest Calvados barrels sourced from Normandy, France. Limited to 6,360 individually numbered bottles, the whisky is bottled at 46% ABV, natural colour and non-chill filtered. Ian added, "I am really excited to unveil this special bottling of our Glencairn whisky. This is the first time we have released a whisky matured in Calvados casks, and the flavours and complexities imparted by these special barriques are both unique and delicious. The elegant orchard fruit and sweet spice notes imparted from the Calvados are a wonderful complement to the signature fruitiness of Glencairn whisky, and I feel this expression really showcases the merits of both of these time-honoured spirits." Alongside the launch of the new Calvados expression and the opening of the visitor centre, Glencairn's premium new look tells a cohesive story of heritage, craftsmanship and place, honouring the past while investing confidently in the future. To find out more, visit www.glencairnwhisky.com. The games at Arbroath and Forfar see trouble. Violence marred the matches involving both Arbroath and Forfar Athletic over the weekend. A brawl broke out between individuals wearing hoodie and face masks following the 1-1 draw with Greenock Morton on Friday night. A video of a fight between both sets of supposed supporters was later shared on social media. It was eventually broken up by police officers, stewards and fellow fans. Meanwhile, at Station Park the next day, there was further disorder as Forfar lost 1-0 to Stirling Albion. It was reported that during the disturbance, a woman was assaulted. A statement from Police Scotland said, around 9:45 p.m. on Friday, we received a report of disorder outside a football ground in Arbroath. Enquiries are ongoing. Around 4:30 p.m. on Saturday, we received a report of disorder within a football ground in Forfar. Officers attended and noted a woman was assaulted. Enquiries are ongoing. Both matches invited under-17s to enter the grounds for free, and it is felt that this may have then contributed in large part to the trouble starting. A statement from Arbroath said, Arbroath FC were extremely disappointed with the unsavoury events that took place outside of the stadium on Friday night. Having offered all under-17s the opportunity to attend free of charge, as we wanted to bring their noise and passion to support us in showcasing both Arbroath and Morton, we are disappointed at the events after full time. We want to emphasise the majority of both sets of supporters did play a brilliant part in adding to the atmosphere. Unfortunately, once again, unacceptable scenes caused by a minority of individuals have brought negative and unwanted press to our clubs and our game. Arbroath FC is currently working with the authorities to identify those who were involved in the incident directly outside Gayfield at full time and to serve the proper sanctions against them. With this, we hope to prevent any further tarnish to the brilliant reputations the majority of fans have created in attending matches for many years at Gayfield. Morton also heavily criticised the behaviour, vowing to work with Arbroath and the authorities in order to help identify those who were involved. Their statement said, the club are aware of the concerning scenes in the aftermath of Friday night's game with Arbroath. Firstly, as a community club, the safety of everyone attending football matches is of the utmost importance to us, and these scenes are deeply disappointing. We thank the majority of our supporters who travelled through in horrendous conditions to back the team to a hard-earned point. We are committed to working with Arbroath and the relevant authorities to ascertain the facts of the situation, identify those involved and take any relevant action required from our end. Our SLO was on hand as these events unfolded, and we once again thank him for his efforts on the night. The behaviour of a minority does not reflect the incredible backing that our supporters give the team up and down the country. This sort of behaviour is completely unacceptable and can impact the club both reputationally and financially. There was a similar sentiment as Forfar also put out a statement suggesting the problems were not caused by actual fans of either side. It said, all at Forfar Athletic FC have been extremely disappointed with the unsavoury and unacceptable incidents which occurred at the end of Saturday's match at Station Park against Stirling Albion FC. First, we want to be very clear that the majority of all supporters at yesterday's match behaved in the usual exemplary manner. As a club, we have been endeavouring to engage with the younger element of our support. We fully understand that they are both the current and future supporters of our club, and we want them to bring their support, noise and passion to create an atmosphere to encourage our team on the pitch. Despite this engagement, during which we have made clear behaviour which will not be tolerated, there were incidents yesterday involving behaviour which was entirely unacceptable. Initial information would appear to indicate that this unacceptable behaviour may have been led by a minority of individuals who, we understand, may not even have been supporters of either team. Unfortunately, that behaviour reflects and impacts on the reputation of our regular supporters and may have serious repercussions for our club. Forfar Athletic FC will not tolerate behaviour of this manner, and we are currently working with the authorities to identify those who were involved in the incidents in order that appropriate action or sanctions may be taken against them. We hope that swift and proportionate action can prevent any repeat of this unacceptable behaviour and can avoid any damage to the reputation which the majority of supporters have created over many years attending matches at Station Park. Stirling Albion is the only one of the four clubs involved not to release a statement or make any comment about the matter. Harry's stay at Montrose is extended. Montrose has extended the contract of Harry Creagues for a further 12 months, keeping the talented prospect at Lynx Park until the summer of 2027. The 18-year-old has recently returned from a short loan spell at Brechin City, where he made 13 appearances. The club has wasted no time in continuing Craig's development with a second loan to the Highland League. He will now spend the rest of the season at Banks of Dee. The local lad has made 25 appearances for Montrose since breaking through from the Youth Academy in 2023, penning his first professional contract back in August. Academy lead David Burns said, "It is fantastic to see Harry extend this contract. He has shown great maturity throughout his development, particularly during his time at Brechin. Moving to Banks of Dee represents a good opportunity for him to keep testing himself within the Highland League. We will be there by his side, monitoring his games and providing the support to help him reach his full potential." Montrose boss Stuart Petrie added, "We are delighted to have extended Harry's stay at Lynx Park and we look forward to welcoming him back in the summer in time for pre-season." Montrose were due to host Peterhead on Saturday in League One, but the match called off due to a waterlogged pitch. They will aim to return to action on Saturday with a trip to East Fife. Montrose women lost 1-0 away to Celtic in the SWPL 1, with Maria McAnamney scoring the only goal of the game on the hour mark. The visitors' keeper, Lauren Perry, was selected as the BBC ALBA player of the match. If the Lynx Park surface dried out in time, the ladies were due to host Hearts last night, Wednesday, and then have a free weekend due to the Spy Sports Cup semi-finals going on.
Hello, this is Julie reading the Angus County Press from the 5th of February, and apologies in advance, I've had a slight cold, so hopefully the reading comes across okay. First Step for Green Hub by Mark Dowie. A major £6 million development at Orchard Bank in Forfar took its first step forward this week after receiving approval from Angus councillors. Members of the local authority's planning committee gave consent for a proposal of application notice for the Green Transport Hub to be sited beside the A90 Forfar bypass, the first stage in any major planning application. Design consultant Stantec UK Limited secured a £186,000 contract to develop the scheme, and this week's approval follows a public engagement event which allowed the public to view the hub layout, which includes clean refuelling stations, biocompressed natural gas supply, hub for commercial vehicle EV charging, infrastructure to allow for initial 34 truck dispenses per day, with potential for future expansion, spare capacity and space to accommodate public or private car and van refuelling welfare building. The council, which is driving the Tay Cities funded initiative, said there had been an overwhelmingly positive response to the project. The site on the west side of Orchard Bank covers 3.6 hectares adjacent to the southbound A90 Dundee to Aberdeen dual carriageway, opposite Angus House Council headquarters and bordered to the north by Forfarlough Country Park. Project representatives also explained measures planned to protect the site from the risk of flooding, as the Scottish Environment Protection Agency had said the area has a high risk of fluvial flooding. A flood bund and peak protection will be built into the scheme. A flood storage zone to the north is to be provided as part of a strategic flood risk assessment for the wider business park, while the flood bund has been included around the north edge of the proposed EV hub. Those measures will also protect an area of peat on the north west edge of the site. A council spokesperson said the response has been overwhelmingly positive, with clear appetite from businesses and academia to work in partnership. By investing in clean refuelling infrastructure, we are supporting the transition to net zero, strengthening regional partnerships and positioning the area as a leader in low carbon transport. A second consultation event is scheduled for February 24th at Forfar Community Campus, and the council hopes to have a detailed planning application submitted in April, with consent secured by September. Councillors Back Plan by Liam Rutherford. An Angus councillor has called for the Glendall Visitor Centre to remain open after revealing she quit her Angus Alive role over plans that could see the centre shut. This follows a recent report revealed that the Cairngorms National Park Authority, CNPA, plans to cut annual funding to Angus Alive. It was further detailed that National Park bosses want to take ranger services back under their own control. However, CNPA also say they do not require the Glendall Visitor Centre, while Angus Alive says it cannot afford to operate the centre and plans to hand it back to the council. The proposals went before councillors at the recent Communities Committee meeting, which proved to be contentious with some elected members. It was revealed during the meeting that independent councillor Serena Cowdy stepped away from her Angus Alive director role. She said, "I quit as a director over this issue of handing back the Ranger Centre. I'm really disappointed Angus Alive couldn't see a use for this building going forward." She added, "I feel a physical base is really, really important in that area for the toilet provision, for the engagement opportunities with new people. Interpretation boards do something, but they don't provide that central hub for people walking in, maybe educational opportunities and also being a physical point of contact and a sanctuary if people get in trouble up the glens. I know we can't stop Angus Alive handing this facility back, but I will be in future meetings pressing very strongly to maintain a physical base there as a nature-focused educational centre." Councillor Beth Whiteside added, "I think the council taking over the building creates opportunities and I'm sure we can find a good use for it going forward." Council officers say it would cost around £10,000 a year to keep the public toilets open. The proposals were backed unanimously. Community group All Smiles After Asda Grant by Mark Dowie. A Forfar community group has welcomed the launch of a new initiative after receiving backing from the Asda Foundation's Better Together programme. Galloshade Community Group has started its new Soup and Smiles group, supported by a £1,000 grant from the foundation. The funding has helped the voluntary group expand its existing community, offered by providing a warm, welcoming space where local people can enjoy a hot, healthy meal, helping to reduce loneliness and isolation in the neighbourhood. Based at St Fergus Hall, the group is run by a dedicated team who deliver a range of activities from Friday afternoon get-togethers offering a cuppa and a chat to boxing classes in partnership with a local gym alongside seasonal family and pop-up events throughout the year. The grant was used to fund essential training, equipment and food supplies for the new weekly sessions which are held on a Friday, as well as new recycling bins to ensure waste is managed responsibly. The new initiative is open to residents of all ages and backgrounds, fostering an inclusive, safe and relaxed space to enjoy homemade soup and company. In addition to securing the funding, Asda Forfar community champion Shona Mitchell has continued to support the group by donating soup ingredients from her monthly community budget and volunteering her time at both the Friday group sessions. She said, "I've volunteered with Galloshade Community for over 3 years and have always been struck by how much time and care the volunteers give to others. They're always keen to do more for the community, and the Soup and Smiles group is a great example of that. The Soup and Smiles session takes place every Friday at 12 to 1:30 p.m. Business networking event. Scotland's largest women-focused community and business network, EGG, is bringing its flagship event to Dundee in March as part of a Scotland-wide tour. The Women on Top tour forms part of EGG's wider ambition to connect women across Scotland and build the largest digital network for women in the UK, ensuring that access to opportunity, inspiration and support is not limited by geography, income or life stage. Crucially, it will offer free childcare, directly tackling one of the most commonly cited barriers preventing women from attending business events, accessing networks and investing in their own growth. Despite women making up a significant proportion of Scotland's entrepreneurial talent, women-led businesses continue to face structural challenges, including limited access to funding, reduced visibility and exclusion from traditional networks. Care responsibilities remain a key factor restricting participation, particularly for mothers and carers. The tour brings together founders, leaders, freelancers and aspiring entrepreneurs for a series of conversation-led events designed to inspire confidence, share lived experience and foster meaningful connection, without the intimidation often associated with business spaces. Women on Top will take place on Thursday, March 12th from 10 till 12 at the V&A Dundee, offering a vibrant morning of inspiration, insight and connection. Studio 132, Meet and Greet. Thinking about your New Year resolutions, want to get out and do something new or pick up an old interest? Whether you're interested in being on or off stage, writing for the stage, or simply want to find out more, Forfar Dramatic Society is holding an informal event for the public and prospective new members to meet existing members, local playwrights, and see your local theatre. The event will be held on Thursday, February 12th at 7 p.m. in Studio 132 at 132 High Street, Forfar. All are welcome to attend and refreshments will be provided. Further information is available on the event page of the Society's Facebook page, Forfar Dramatic Society. Volunteers for Tatty Day. Sustainable Kirriemuir is looking for volunteers to support one of its forthcoming popular events. Love to bake but don't want to be left eating it all yourself? Or do you have a speciality you love to share with others? The group is looking for donations of home baking for its upcoming Kirriemuir Tatty Day on Saturday, February 21st. No need to be able to rival Great British Bake Off contestants. Whether it's a simple biscuit or a fancy sponge cake, all contributions will be welcome. Anyone able to donate should get in touch by emailing info@sustainablekirriemuir.co.uk for drop-off information. Volunteers are also needed for the day itself. The annual event is always fun and there will be plenty of time to shop the fantastic selection of seed potatoes from Potato House and join in with the day's activities. Gin Bothy wins its way to a Scott Mid listing by Mark Dowie. An Angus business has been named as one of the winners of Scott Mid's Scottish Favourites competition, securing the opportunity to have its products listed in ScotMid stores this year. The Jam Bothy is one of six businesses from across Scotland which have made it to the final list, its Scottish chilli jam and Scottish strawberry jam securing its place. Launched as part of Scottish Food and Drink September 2025, the competition is designed to support local producers by raising their profiles, opening routes into retail and bringing innovative Scottish food and drink products to convenient shoppers. The recent competition, run in partnership with Scotland Food and Drink, attracted a strong field of entries reflecting the continued strength, diversity and quality of the nation's food and drink sector. With innovation as the theme, producers were challenged to submit products that offered something new, imaginative and distinctive. From retro-inspired favourites and globally influenced flavours to to on-trend dairy and healthier snack options, this year's winning lineup highlights the breadth of ideas currently shaping the market. Angus Bell at Scotland Food and Drink added, "Scottish Favourites continues to provide an important opportunity for ambitious producers to engage with retail and showcase their products to a wider audience. The winners combine creativity with commercial appeal. Whether reinventing familiar favourites or responding to emergency consumer demands, these businesses are helping to grow our brilliant fruit and drink sector in Scotland." TV spot for Arbroath singer. Arbroath hairdresser and wine bar owner Danny Lavery was surprised to become Michael McIntyre's unexpected star on Saturday's edition of his big show. Danny Laverty, who runs Lord Rubin's wine bar with husband Paul Johnson, was surprised in a wine tasting ruse which saw him take part in a wine tasting session in a mock-up cellar with Rob Rinder. Dubbed the singing hairdresser, Danny is well known locally for using his talents to raise thousands of pounds for a variety of charities over the years. Set up by his family, who were in the audience, after being surprised, Danny had an hour to rehearse with a vocal coach before taking to the stage of the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. He then closed the show with a performance of the Julie London hit Cry Me a River to huge applause from the audience. Caused Man's Death by Mark Dowie. A woman has been convicted of causing the death of an Asda security guard in Arbroath. Alan Harris Richards fell to the ground and struck his head after trying to prevent Natasha Smith from leaving the Westway retail park store with stolen alcohol in June 2024. On Wednesday at the High Court in Edinburgh, Smith, 38, admitted causing the 61-year-old such physical and emotional distress during the incident that he suffered a fatal heart attack. Smith also admitted assaulting another Asda employee during the same altercation within the store. The court heard that following the death of Mr. Harris Richards, pathologists carried out a post-mortem examination and found he had an undiagnosed coronary artery condition. They said people with the condition were at risk of sudden death at any time, and this was particularly true during times of illness or stress. The court heard that during the confrontation, which was recorded on Mr. Harris Richards' body-worn camera, Smith shouted, swore, and repeatedly attempted to pull a bag containing the alcohol from his grasp. After Mr. Harris Richards fell to the floor, Smith continued to struggle with two female employees at the supermarket and grabbed one of them, put her hands around her neck and told her, "I will end you." Smith will be sentenced at the High Court in Edinburgh on Thursday, March 5th. Detective Chief Inspector Craig Kelly said her thoughts remain with Alan's family, friends and colleagues and all those affected by his death. At the time, Asda's Chief People and Corporate Affairs Officer Hayley Tatum said the company was truly saddened by Mr. Harris Richards' death. "Our deepest condolences are with his friends and families at this difficult time. We are providing support to colleagues at our Arbroath store and would like to thank customers for their understanding during this difficult time." Well-known pub up for sale. A long-established Montrose pub has been put on the market with an asking price of £230,000. The Black Horse Inn on Murray Street is a popular community pub, home to live entertainment on occasional weekends, sports, two resident darts team and a dominoes team. It attracts customers of all ages and is known for its social atmosphere. The property also contains a one-bedroom apartment with its own external door, which is let out. After 7.5 years, the owners have now decided to retire. Simon Watson from agents Christie & Co said this is a great opportunity to buy a freehold pub in the heart of Montrose, with an established local trade and potential to increase revenue further through the self-let accommodation. Public inquiry called to look at pylon project by Mark Dowie. A public inquiry looks set to be launched into SSEN's controversial Kintore to Tailing pylon project after Angus councillors rejected the scheme. In November, elected members unanimously opposed the 400 kilovolt overhead line project, part of SSEN's Transmissions Pathway to 2030 investment of more than £20 billion. The scheme involves new pylons averaging 57 metres in height being erected along more than 60 miles of Aberdeenshire and Angus countryside. However, the scheme was branded an act of vandalism on a colossal scale. Angus councillors went against the advice of their own head of planning to lodge a formal objection with the Scottish Government's Energy Consents Unit. Under the terms of the Electricity Act, an objection by a statutory body such as a council automatically triggers a public inquiry, but only if it cannot be resolved. Aberdeenshire and Aberdeen City Councils raised no objections, but an inquiry into the Angus area objection now looks set to go ahead, and two reporters have been appointed by the Scottish Government's Planning and Environmental Appeals Division. It said the Scottish ministers have directed the inquiry be held into the objecting authorities area being Angus Council. The reporters will look at the documents and submissions and will consider what further procedures are necessary in order to consider this case. Documents will be published shortly. Further details will be forthcoming in due course. Blanket 20 mile per hour limits rejected by councillors, by Mark Dowie. The Scottish Government's Transport Agency has said that a decision by Angus councillors not to adopt a national 20 mile per hour speed strategy is down to the individual local authority. At a recent meeting of their Communities Committee, members went against Transport Scotland's plans and the advice of the council's own roads officials in blocking the idea. The transport body hopes to have the blanket scheme in place by the spring, with the aim of reducing accidents and making streets safer by bringing in a 20 mph limit in built-up areas. Early results in other local authorities have seen collisions in 20 to 30 zones fall by more than 70%. The decision whether or not to apply it to appropriate streets rests with individual councils. Dundee and Perth and Kinross have adopted the strategy, and Angus Roads officials highlighted that point when the issue was discussed by the committee. They also said it would help to deliver consistency for drivers in Angus towns and villages. However, councillors unanimously agreed not to take the universal approach, citing a survey which saw more than 61% of 1,200 respondents reject the proposal. Opponents suggested there would be a lack of compliance or police enforcement of 20 mph limits. Outdoor access rights are at breaking point, by Julie Curry. Scotland's world-class outdoor access rights are being pushed to breaking point due to a collapse in investment in staff and paths. Since 2003, people in Scotland have enjoyed a legal right to walk, cycle, ride horses and exercise on nearly all land, provided they behave responsibly. However, a new report from Rambler Scotland shows these rights have been hollowed out by a combination of underfunding and a lack of staff to handle soaring complaints about blocked trails, broken bridges and irresponsible access. The charity's survey of frontline staff at 32 councils and two national parks found seven local authorities employ no access officers to uphold the Scottish Outdoor Access Code, and most were reluctant to use legal powers to protect the public's access rights. There is an all-time low of just 33 full-time equivalent access officers, half the number employed when the right to roam went live 20 years ago. Several authorities are also failing to host local access forums, statutory bodies that enable diverse voices, from landowners to walkers, to work together to find solutions. Brendan Paddy, Rambler Scotland director, said these shocking results saw that we've got world-class outdoor access rights but third-rate funding. Frontline staff are sounding the alarm that the system is breaking down as we lack the people to fix access problems and too many paths are now inaccessible, unsafe or simply no longer exist. Scotland's international reputation as a pioneer of outdoor access is in danger of becoming a hollow boast unless politicians act. The Land Reform Act 2003 is seen as one of the standout achievements of Scotland's devolved parliament, with more people now enjoying Scotland's countryside than ever before. However, Rambler Scotland research shows that investment in recreational paths is at a low ebb due to funding pots closing, a failure to adjust for inflation, and councils diverting access money to unrelated budgets. A new era for education as public body launches. Qualifications Scotland started work on Monday, ushering in a new era for the delivery of qualifications and assessments. Scotland's newest public body, created by the Education Scotland Act 2025, passed by the Scottish Parliament last year, will give learners, teachers and lecturers much stronger influence. Early priorities outlined in its accelerating change plan for the coming months include pushing on with the reform of qualifications, including early engagement on plans to place less reliance on exams in several subjects, and bringing in 4 classroom teachers to bolster the newly formed school partnership team to build stronger relationships with schools, teachers, parents, carers and pupils. The organisation also plans to recruit learners, educators and stakeholders to sit on a newly formed advisory group so that more people are involved with shaping decisions and strengthening the accreditation function to reinforce its independence within the organisation. The Education Scotland Act 2025 sets out the establishment of 2 interest committees, one for learners and one for teachers and practitioners, with recruitment now open. The committees will advise Qualifications Scotland on how qualifications operate in real settings, from studying the qualifications to what it is like for schools, colleges, training providers and employers to deliver them. Committee members will share their experiences to influence decisions and shape future developments. Chief Executive Nick Page said the arrival of Qualifications Scotland represents a reset for our qualifications system, for Scotland, and most importantly for learners, teachers, head teachers, lecturers, principals, training providers and businesses. By delivering on the legislation passed by Parliament, by building on the strong support we have across the education, skills and business sectors, and by harnessing the passion and commitment of our staff, we have an opportunity to accelerate change and to power long-term success. Motorists invited to take driving MOT by Mark Dowie. The Scottish Government and Road Safety Scotland have launched a national driver MOT roadshow visiting Angus this week. The roadshow is part of a fitness to drive campaign encouraging local drivers aged 60 and over to reflect on their driving skills and take steps to stay safe and confident behind the wheel. Transport Scotland data show a continuing trend towards increasing numbers of casualties aged 60 and over. With more than 850,000 drivers in this age group in Scotland, the campaign highlights the importance of recognising changes that can come with age and taking simple, practical steps to address them. These include booking regular eye examinations, reducing nighttime driving, avoiding busy junctions at peak hours, and refreshing driving skills with a mature driving review. The roadshow, which is near Arbroath today and in Montrose tomorrow, will raise awareness of these measures. Local drivers can drop by for information and reassurance, as well as advice on how to adapt driving habits to continue driving safely for longer. Friends and family are also encouraged to attend for tips on starting supportive conversations if they have concerns about a loved one's driving. Fiona Hislop, Cabinet Secretary for Transport, said as we get older, changes to eyesight, hearing and reaction times can all affect our ability to drive safely. The Fitness to Drive campaign is about supporting older drivers to recognise those changes and take action to continue to stay safe on the road. Further dates and locations on the roadshow's tour can be found at www.roadsafety.scot/mature-driver-roadshow. Help with funeral costs. People in Angus who lose someone over the winter months are encouraged to apply for support to help with funeral costs. Funeral support payment is delivered by Social Security Scotland and is available to people living in Scotland to receive certain benefits. More than £66 million has been paid to over 33,000 bereaved people since the payment was launched in 2019. Shirley Ann Somerville, Cabinet Secretary for Social Justice, said on top of their grief, people often face the staggering costs of paying for the funeral. The average price for a funeral in the UK is now well over £4,000. This is a cost many do not have the resources to pay for. Funeral support payment is there to ease some of the financial pressure. I urge people in Angus to check their eligibility to receive funeral support payment. £115,000 award to help replace pitch by Mark Dowie. Montrose FC has been successful in attracting funding of more than £115,000 towards a major project to upgrade its artificial grass pitch at Lynx Park. The project is one of 36 across Scotland to benefit from new all-weather pitches, extending playing hours through flood lighting and modern changing facilities designed to welcome underserved groups such as women and girls, and a new boost for grassroots sports facilities by the UK government. The funding has been awarded through the Multi-Sport Grassroots Facilities Programme in 25-26. These new or refurbished facilities will give families low-cost options to stay active on their doorstep, helping when many are facing cost-of-living pressures. It will also open up opportunities to underserved groups like women and girls. At least half of all funding will go directly to the 30% most deprived communities in the UK. Sports clubs and organisations will also benefit from new goalposts, fencing and new changing pavilions, all of which help make sites more accessible and sustainable for local communities. To ensure broader participation beyond football, at least 40% of funded projects must have a multi-sport offer, giving more access to a wider variety of sports and activities such as rugby, cricket and basketball. New Double Yellow Lines for Angus Streets by Liam Rutherford. Angus is set to introduce a raft of double yellow lines across the county in a bid to tackle inappropriate parking. Councillors approved the proposals during a Communities Committee meeting on Tuesday. Under the plans, no waiting zones will be introduced at over 60 locations across towns and villages in Angus. An accompanying report outlined that Police Scotland, elected members and residents have raised a number of concerns regarding inappropriate curbside parking. This includes concerns relating to restricted visibility at junctions, general congestion, impacts on access and lack of loading facilities for local businesses. However, the proposals racked up 27 initial objections to the new restrictions from members of the public. Of the 27 objections, 10 were subsequently withdrawn, leaving 17 unresolved objections. The majority of these related to a corner of Dundee Street and Gardine Street in Lethem, outside the village's key store. Speaking during the meeting, resident Phyllis Jolly said, "We are very alarmed that removing four parking spaces outside the store to create a wider bend will lead to increased speed, and it is speed that causes accidents, not just poor visibility." Councillor Ronnie Proctor subsequently lodged a motion to reduce the planned 20-metre restriction to 10 metres on Gardine Street and 5 metres on Dundee Road. The motion split the chamber down the middle. However, committee convener Tommy Stewart ruled in favour of the reduced yellow lines with the casting vote. And we have Angus tennis players ranked in the top 10 by Chad Neighbour. Angus tennis has once again punched well above its weight with two county players in the top 10 for singles in the revived Scottish rankings. Cameron Fryer of Montrose is ranked number 6 after its successful year playing for Stirling University and in open play. He has climbed two places from the 2024 rankings behind the likes of top-tier pros Cameron Norrie and Jacob Fernley. The other players ranked above him, Hamish Stewart, Aidan McHugh and Ewan Lumsden, regularly play in Challenger and International Tennis Federation professional tournaments abroad. Fryer did not retain his number 10 ranking in doubles, however, despite reaching numerous finals and winning several tournaments. The players above him, including Jamie Murray at number 1, play mainly in international tournaments with more ranking points. Fryer, however, has one more year at university and is choosing to turn out for home club Montrose Tennis Club each week in the Tennis Tayside League. Meanwhile, he has started the new year strongly, winning the Lexus British Tour singles title at Stirling this past weekend over the number one seed Liam Hignett from Hampshire, 6-2, 7-5. Kirsty Robertson from Arbroath, who plays for David Lloyd and Monnie Feith, is ranked number 8 for singles and number 10 for doubles. Celebrating the Lower League Stars by Brian Newell. Football Groundhoppers, A Dad, His Lad and His Lad are currently organising the Lower Leagues of Scottish Football Awards. Chris Law, his son Charlie and dad Peter initially started a Facebook page to document their travels around the lower leagues in the west of Scotland. However, they were soon being invited to visit clubs across the whole country in both the men's and women's games. After learning there were no national awards to recognise all those who play in and give their time to the game outside the SPFL and SWPL, they decided to create their own. The ceremony will take place at Glenhill Hotel in Renfrew this September, when awards in excess of 50 categories will be given out. The next article is Macado Departs to Rejoin His Old Club by Brian Newell. Mateus Macado has left Montrose to rejoin Elgin City just weeks after making his 100th appearance for the club. The midfielder arrived at Lincs Park from Rothes 2 years ago, but a desire for more game time saw Montrose accept a bid for the 24-year-old. The Brazilian is no stranger to Borough Briggs, having previously played for Elgin during the 21-22 season. Montrose boss Stuart Petrie said, "I would like to thank Mateus for all his efforts whilst he has been here. He's a great lad with a great personality, was always very professional in the way he trained and played, and will be missed around the group. Recently, we have been unable to give him the amount of game time that he craves, something we totally understand and respect. So when the opportunity arose with Elgin and a significant offer was put on the table, it quickly became obvious it was the right thing for all the parties involved. We wish Mateus all the very best for the future." Alston is officially a Forfar player. Veteran midfielder Blair Alston has officially become a Forfar Athletic player after agreeing a deal until the end of the season. The 33-year-old first made his name during a 6-year spell at his hometown club in Falkirk. Alston would then spend the next 4 seasons in the Premiership with St Johnstone and Hamilton Accies. A return to Falkirk was followed by spells at Kilmarnock, where he scored the winning goal to clinch the championship title, Partick Thistle and Stenhouse Muir. Alston had previously turned out 3 times for Forfar this season as a trialist, twice in the KDM Evolution Trophy and in the league against Stirling Albion. He made his official debut as a second-half substitute away to East Kilbride on Saturday, but couldn't prevent a 3-1 defeat. City bring duo back to the club. Lewis Martin and Kieran Ingalls have both returned to Brechin City from Forfar Athletic. Ingalls spent 4 years at Glebe Park from 2019 and 2023, with the midfielder making 127 appearances and scoring 31 goals, helping to win the Highland League title in his last season. Martin was an ever-present during the 23-24 and 24-25 seasons, with the defender being named Player of the Year during his first campaign. City boss Andy Kirk told the club's website, "I'm delighted to bring both Lewis and Kieran back to the club." City were due to host for Martin United on Saturday and then travel to Bucky Thistle last night on Wednesday, but both matches were postponed due to waterlogged pitches. Weather permitting, next up will be a trip to Huntley on Saturday. And last article, Praise Needs to be Earned by Brian Newell. Arbroath co-manager David Gold cut a frustrated figure following his side's 2-1 defeat at Queen's Park on Saturday in the Championship. Tom Lang was handed a debut in defence on Saturday following his arrival on loan from Falkirk the day before. However, the visitors would be without Jacob McIntyre as his parent club Hibernian wanted him back for the weekend. Players can switch freely between clubs which have a cooperation agreement when required, and he was on the bench against Rangers. Also absent was Bulgarian striker Nikolai Todorov, who has left the club by mutual consent after 4 goals in 25 appearances. Arbroath took the lead in Glasgow after 19 minutes as Ryan Dow clipped the ball to the back post for Scott Robinson to knock home. However, the lead would only last 6 minutes as Aidan Connolly equalised, then Seb Drozd grabbed what proved to be the winner right on the stroke of half-time. Gold told Arbroath FC TV, "It's really frustrating. Credit to Queen's Park, they're obviously at the wrong end of the table, but they've got quality within their team. They've got a good manager who gets them organised and got them working hard, so we know it was going to be difficult. It was never going to be easy. It's just frustrating that we go one up and we've got the chances to actually score more goals but didn't take them." Arbroath now have the weekend off due to the Scottish Cup.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Well, hello again. It's Liz from East Kilbride here. You know, there's been a lot in the news about so-called space tourists, multi-millionaires and their celebrity pals who venture up for about 10 minutes or so into suborbital flight, and then they claim they're astronauts. That's what they are, they say. But you know, I'm incredibly sceptical about that. But there is one among these recent flyers who truly deserves a flight towards the heavens, and that person is my choice today. One, believe it or not, called Wally Funk, who did fly in 2021 with the millionaire Jeff Bezos in his Blue Origin spaceship at the grand old age of 82. And I want to share her unique story with you today. Well, first of all, of course, I should explain the name. Funk has origins who knows where in the myriad of folk who ended up in the Americas in the 19th century. The Wally is actually Wallace. She was christened Mary Wallace Funk. Is that a Scottish connection? Is she really the first Scottish woman in space? Well, I don't have the time for that today. But from a very young age, the family did not use Mary. They just called her Wally. What a wee gal she was. She was born in 1939, way out in New Mexico, actually Las Vegas, before it became the gambling super city. Her family ran what they called a variety store. Really, we would call it maybe a 24-hour convenience store. And many of the local folk were artists. They didn't have much money, so they paid the Funk family in artworks. Peculiar sculptures, abstract paintings were an early influence on Wally. And growing up, she was a wee girl who had adventures, climbed things, tumbled over things, fell off things. She writes, "I got my first try at flying, really pure flying, by wearing my Superman cape and jumping off the top of my dad's barn when I was about 5 years old." A gal for adventures. Now, interestingly, her mum supported this adventurous spirit. She herself had never been allowed to go beyond the traditional confines of a young girl's upbringing. So she supported Wally as Wally went to school, because at home, Wally was already into mechanics, building model aeroplanes and ships, and she was making planes from balsa wood by the age of 7. Age 9, her first flying lesson. Now, where was the outlet for this girl at that time and at that age? Well, it was in being a very adventurous outdoors woman. She rode horses. She rode her bike. She was a keen skier and, in fact, represented the southwest of America as a top female skier. In terms of her education, the high school did not allow her to do the subjects that she wanted. Subjects like mechanical drawing, auto mechanics. She was told, "You're a girl, You're doing home economics. She was so outraged by this, she left school early to attend a college in Missouri, which did allow her to do more technical subjects. And at the age of 19, she graduated with her pilot's license. That was only stage one. The next place she went on to was Oklahoma State University. Now, Wally was not of a wealthy family. She did her best odd jobs to earn extra money because she wanted to have more aviation qualifications. Again, in hard words, I could trade off mowing the grass between the runways, and that way I could have more glider flying time. She became qualified in a myriad of different flying machines, commercial machines, single-engine seaplanes, then moving in further to qualifications. Qualifications like a flight instructor, a ground instructor, and that then leads to, from around the age of 22, for really the rest of her official working life, Wally Funk was the first in, well, actually, I lost track of how many areas she was the first in. She was the first female flight instructor at a US military base. And then she was a chief pilot with an aviation company. All this was part of a zeal to show she could be as good. And in fact, more than that, she must have had the people skills to explain what she did, because she's teaching eventually in her career as an aviator. She's actually the chief pilot for 5 aviation schools across the United States, had taught over 3,000 private pilots, as well as a long and successful career in her spare time, doing air races crisscrossing the United States of America and over into the Pacific Ocean. And it's not just the practical work that she's doing. This very fine technical brain was called on. She was the first woman to qualify as a flight inspector. And in fact, in that career, she investigated over 400 accidents, ranging from a probable hit by a mafia crowd on somebody they just didn't like anymore, to a fatal, tragic crash of a small plane into a mortuary building. Wally Funk was respected as a professional. She was loved for her skill in explaining the technicalities of flying, and everyone across that aviation sector of America said, Wally, she's the best in so many areas of aerospace. Now, while she's gaining all these firsts in the 1950s and then into the early 60s, of course, America has decided to put people into space. Well, more exactly, they decided to put men into space. Some of the younger aviation women pilots said, wait a minute here. We are skillful pilots. We are commercial pilots. We're even stunt pilots. We should be given the chance to join the astronaut selection program. The view of NASA, backed up by then President Eisenhower, said no women should be considered for the official astronaut program. The government wouldn't give money to put women into space. Let's not even interview and assess these women contenders. One man thought women should at least be tested, and this man was a Dr. Lovelace, associated with the NASA program. So almost as a secret shadow program, he selected 13 women, in his Women in Space program. They would assess them, they would do the same physical and psychometric tests as the men, but in fact, there was never a reality then of having them put up in the Apollo program or even the earlier original Mercury program. But he did decide to give them an official name, and that became the Mercury 13 program, sitting the tests, rigorous physical and mental testing, where Wally Funk was one of the 13 and did incredibly well in many of the tests, including a sensory deprivation tank, where the bold Wally was there for around 10 hours and thoroughly enjoyed the experience. Mercury 13 gave them their data, and then the women were told, just go home, do your best, continue your careers, but you're not part of NASA. It was decades later, in fact in 1995, when Eileen Collins became the first woman to pilot a space shuttle into space. Now, our Wally Funk was too old to become a space shuttle pilot, but Collins acknowledged their pioneer work, and she invited the surviving members of the Mercury 13 to see her launch from the Kennedy Space Center. Wally had not given up. In 2012, she put her own money down because she had heard there was a possibility of a private flight into space. And 9 years later, when our Wally was 82, she was one of the members with Jeff Bezos in that first flight on his Blue Origin spacecraft. So she was there as the space tourism thing developed, but my, isn't she far more than a space tourist. And actually, when I look at the career and the determination and the joy in being in space that Wally Funk showed age 82, her life and all these firsts that she achieved, her life is so much more than just attempting to be an astronaut in the Mercury 13 program. Decades as an instructor, a flight inspector, training over 3,000 pilots, the chief pilot at aviation schools, teaching the pilots of the US Army, she, I believe, is a true inheritor of the dreams, the aspiration, and the legacy of the early aviators, Amy Johnson and Amelia Earhart. Wally Funk, I hope you've enjoyed her story, a truly wonderful woman of aerospace.
That's all, folks. Goodbye.